We're going to spend the rest of this hour considering what will be the Trump policy toward Muslims in America. Will the fight against terrorism become a much closer monitoring of Muslim communities around the country? Communities that have already expressed fear over the election of Donald Trump. Ashraf Nomani is a former Wall Street Journal reporter, co-founder of the Muslim Reform Movement, and author of Standing Alone, An American Women's Struggle for the Soul of Islam. She voted for Donald Trump and shared her reasons why in a widely read Washington Post opinion piece. She says she voted for Trump because he may represent a more realistic way of dealing with fears that are too often shut down by what she calls the identity politics of the American left.
Well, the way I put it is that I voted for Donald Trump. You know, I'm a journalist, as you know, and I have equal opportunity skepticism and cynicism about politicians and bureaucrats and political leaders. And so I voted for him as the best choice that I faced last Tuesday. And I stand by my vote, but I will watch very carefully and consider myself, you know, a ombudsman of sorts to make sure that we preserve ideas of human rights and individual rights and liberal values that America is so proud to be a part of.
So it sounds to me, and that's a little bit theoretical, that you're willing to listen to Mr. Bannon's approach to what should happen in immigration and as far as the vetting of Muslims is concerned in the United States, and you're not inclined to listen to charges that he made anti-Semitic statements at some time in the past, that you're much more interested in what he's going to say now that he's appointed to this post.
Oh, I'm absolutely interested in everything. Like I said, I'm equal opportunity, but at the same time, you know, he's in position now, right? Like, either there's going to be a trial in the court of public opinion and he's going to be removed, which is not likely, right? Like, that sounds like what folks on the left are trying to accomplish, and it's not going to happen. I mean, this demagoguery continues, and it continues to avoid any kind of conversation about the issues at heart. You know, the one dear to my heart is the issue of Islamic extremism, so let's just use that as an example. But I care also very much about issues of illegal immigration here. So on Islamic extremism, we can continue to play this game and do this dance that there's no Islam in the Islamic State. And the right will continue to have its really tough, strong, aggressive policies. Or we can acknowledge that there's an ideological problem that is a very minority part of our population, and we can then isolate that, just as extremists in all communities have to be isolated, and defeat it. That's our choice. And so I'm not going to just sit back and wait for policy changes. I'm going to do all that I can in my power to try to engage those that are in decision-making to move them to a place of humanity about these different decisions. But at the same time, on the left, we have to really acknowledge that there's an entire population of people, including me, who are seriously concerned about the refugee issue and extremism and our illegal immigration population here in the U.S. I feel deep compassion and heart for all of those issues, but at the same time, there's also pragmatic solutions we have to find instead of just this shutting down of debate.
Listen, I'm not dehumanizing the alt-right movement. I'm not dehumanizing them. They're here. I'm saying this is what they recommend to purge Islamic terrorism from the United States. And I'm not doing trash talk against you or anyone or any Trump voter. The message of the election is, who are we in the United States? The message of the election is not, here come the fascists. I'm clear about that. But what I just want to know from you, what you're going to say if the Trump mission becomes mass deportations, building of walls, at which Trump has already said he's going to build the wall and he's going to start with the deportations. Sanctuary cities are ready for the deportation collision. And then the question becomes, are Islamic communities going to be disrupted and surveilled as the target of Islamic terrorism when the Orlando attack and the San Bernardino attack none of the attacks in the United States had anything to do with a kind of systematic tolerance of Islamic terrorism in mosques around the United States?
That's the narrative that's presented. I mean, the way you present it, John, is absolutely that the sky is falling. But no, I don't believe that we're going to have mass deportations. I mean, already Donald Trump has said that he's going to be looking at the folks that have criminal records, which I think some people might have some agreement with, and especially folks that are in the middle on the issue of San Bernardino in Orlando. The couple and San Bernardino and Omar Mateen in Orlando were radicalized. The narrative has become that they were not radicalized at mosque.
But who would have turned them? Who would have turned them in? I mean, what systematic program is going to turn in the Orlando terrorists or the San Bernardino terrorists? And 2 million people with criminal records, Donald Trump saying he's going to deport is mass deportation. That's not the sky
thing,
is falling.
Like, I don't feel, and I love you, but I don't feel that. I feel like this is exactly the point at which the conversation has been deteriorating in America, because I'm trying to express from my perspective the challenge and the reality that we have of Islamic extremist ideology in our communities, in our mosques, in our families. And the pushback, which I understand is from your perspective very real, that it doesn't exist as I'm saying that it does. So there's hardly any place to go then, because I'm saying to you that it does happen. It is here. I go to mosques and they still think that the Jews did 9/11. And so those are realities that we're not allowed to talk about, because
we're absolutely allowed to talk about it. And we're talking about it here. For me, the question is what approach is going to change that? Are you saying that imams who declare that 9/11 was accomplished by Jews should be deported from the United States, should be arrested, that people such as the FBI should go to the mosques in Manassas and listen to those sermons and then arrest and interrogate those people, that's something that we're going to be doing now?
I know, as a Muslim, I'm saying that we need to sit in those mosques and we need to monitor what's being said and we need to challenge our imams, and then we absolutely have to, you know, see something, say something. You know, if we believe that there is anybody who is radicalizing any individual, whether it is from our white extremist communities or whether it's from our Muslim communities, we have to stand up. What am I expressing is that over 8 years, I believe that we have failed in having a rational conversation and solution on these issues of Islamic extremism. Under the Obama administration, we have had a lobby and special interest groups that have pushed back on any kind of law enforcement activity. And so I understand the limits that we need to have in society, but I also understand the threat. And what I'm trying to just explain is that influenced my vote, and I believe the vote of many other people, so that if we're trying to dissect what happened last Tuesday, I think this would be good to try to understand.
Are you going to feel better if law enforcement has a much freer hand to observe and profile Muslims in the United States with the intent of preventing Islamic terrorism and radicalization from happening in the United States, all the way down to monitoring speech like the Jews did 9/11?
So this is one of those moments when, you know, I feel like there's a right answer and a wrong answer, and then there's my answer. And my answer is that I am more comfortable with law enforcement beefing up its enforcement policies. I've had this debate over the last 8 years, and it's always turned as, if you want any more rational threat assessment, if you want any more rational surveillance put in place that does not, you know, deny people's civil liberties in this country and maintains, you know, the law, of course, you're immediately anti-Muslim. And thus the debate is shut down. The FBI has had to clear its training dockets. It's had to clear its policies. The NYPD has had to reverse its policies. I know you're well familiar with that. And it's not just, you know, a lawsuit. These are well-funded operations that have been put in place to basically challenge law enforcement in this country. And I'm on the side of, you know, a safer society through pragmatic, rational means. And unfortunately, I believe that the identity politics of the day have made it so that everybody is just shut down and we can't even have the conversation. And then going back to your first point, the alt-right rises. And I just believe that a little bit of soul-searching on the side of the left would allow us to then understand that, you know, our own engagement in this dynamic has helped with this rise of the alt-right.
Usher, why is it the case that if all I'm saying is that mosques and other churches be treated equally and that surveillance not be related to specific religious criteria and that we focus our crime-fighting efforts overseas where they basically belong, and if I say that, then I join some liberal narrative which ends in I'm a Wahhabi that basically wants you to put a scarf on.
I didn't go that far. I didn't go that far. I just went as far
madness.
As saying that, yeah, what I went so far as to saying is that you then end up allied with the Wahhabis.
I'm not allied with the Wahhabis.
I'm saying that's what ends up happening because John.
I'm not. I couldn't be more opposed to the Wahhabis.
I know that you absolutely are, but what is it that most distressed me about the emails that came out of Hillary Clinton's inbox and John Podesta's inbox, the gifts, right, from governments of Qatar and Saudi Arabia, the Wahhabis, to the Clinton Foundation. So that is then the left, the liberals in our America, getting in bed with the Wahhabis and the Salafis.
Look, I am as offended by that as you, although nobody can be surprised that a United States government is going to be friendly to Saudi Arabia and Qatar. The United States and Saudi Arabia have been in bed since the 1930s, for heaven's sakes. There's no surprise here. That has nothing to do with whether we do surveillance of mosques and Islamic terrorism in the United States. It's apples and oranges. I agree with you. That's offensive. But again,
I'll tell you how it's related. It is related to me because then what those governments do is that they have money sent to these special interest groups. They then put out this idea that we're all under attack, that Islam has nothing to do with extremism, that our mosques are not incubators for radicalization. And then we come to this point where we're at in our conversation that there's absolutely no evidence for that kind of surveillance. But in fact, dating all the way back to the World Trade Center attacks in 1993, you know as well as I do that the Brooklyn, New Jersey mosques were used very conveniently to radicalize the men who were involved in those attacks. I know that this Salafi Wahhabi ideology is being preached, you know, all across this country. I can do like a mosque search, you know, and find the Salafi mosque in my local town.
Okay, fine. I totally understand it. And I think there was a lot of police activity after 1993 in the World Trade Center attacks that broke up and prosecuted the people in Brooklyn and Jersey City. I think police activity was very, very effective there. It sounds to me like you're saying, though, that if you find Salafi or Wahhabi propaganda in mosques in Queens or in Santa Barbara or in Austin, Texas, that police should watch those mosques and that that's going to reassure you as a tool against fighting Islamic radicalism. That's all I want to know. You feel better if the cops are doing that.
I would feel better.
Okay,
because,
great. Then
yeah,
who radicalized Dylann Roof to go into the church in South Carolina and shoot the black people praying?
So this is exactly what happens, is that my conversation about Islamic extremism then gets equated to Dylann Roof. Like, this is so classic of what's happened over this past year. Do you think that I want us to have a blind eye to white extremism? Of course not. I want us to monitor any place. If there's a church where there's a white extremist preacher preaching, we should be there. If there's a bar where they're hanging out, if there's any place that they're hanging out, pizza joint, I don't care, a park, we should be there. And so there should be equal opportunity surveillance and monitoring of anybody who has these kind of extremist ideas that can lead to violence.
Okay, that's fine. And I just think that speech is one factor in the radicalization of individuals, but there are all kinds of other factors that we ignore in the United States.
We are going to allow free speech and our liberal principles to kill us, basically. We do this all at our peril. Europe is seeing blood being spilled on its streets from Brussels to London because they have bent over backwards trying to be accommodating. I believe in liberalism. I believe in free speech. But there has to be limits also. And when that free speech includes, you know, basically turning a country from secular governance to political Islam, that's pretty dangerous stuff.
All right, Oscar. Well, as you said, your role as a Trump voter is also to be an ombudsman and a watcher of what happens in the Trump administration. Good luck with that. We'll be with you in that watching.
And I appreciate, John, that you keep me honest. So I do appreciate it. Thank you for the conversation, as passionate as it got.
Oh, absolutely. Asra Nomani is former Wall Street Journal reporter, co-founder of the Muslim Reform Movement. She had an op-ed in the Washington Post, which she disclosed that she's a Trump voter. Thank you so much, Asra.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.